This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Chloe Hannay is the founder of Willow & Burt Interiors. Chloe is an interior designer and soft furnishings consultant who also creates bespoke, beautiful, handcrafted curtains, blinds, cushions and other soft furnishings which are always finished with a Willow & Burt signature flourish. I absolutely love talking to Chloe. She's the first guest I've had on who what she offers is, I would describe it as a product and a service all in one. I was fascinated by that. I don't know much about the world of design and interior design particularly. It was a really interesting conversation and I really hope that you also find it enjoyable, you learn from it and you're inspired too. So I'd love now to introduce you to Chloe. So hi Chloe, thank you so much for being here.
Not at all, it's really nice to talk to you, Vicky.
So can we please start with you giving an introduction to yourself and your business, please?
Yes, of course. Hi there, I'm Chloe and I live in Edenbridge in Kent with my husband and five children. We are part of a big, crazy, blended family. And it's fair to say life is quite chaotic with five teenagers in the house. So Willow & Burt started about 8 years ago, and it really grew from a passion that I've always had for interior design or interiors. As a child, I watched my parents doing up various houses and enjoyed kind of looking and seeing what they were doing. And it was always quite fun when the builders were in and things were moving around. I also remember going to kind of antiques fairs with my family as well and looking for things. And my parents also used to have lots of kind of coffee table books, which I remember sort of weekend mornings flicking through and just kind of wondering how it all came together and how houses became the homes that they are. So I've always had that long held interest. I think my big passion as well as a child was the Laura Ashley catalogue, and I would spend hours planning how I wanted every room in my, you know, my future house to be. There isn't any Laura Ashley stuff in my house, I have to say, but I think it definitely planted a seed inside me at a very young age in terms of interior design and looking at how things hang together in the home.
Amazing. So can you please tell us, well, first of all, maybe when you started Willow & Burt, and then just give us a really quick brief summary of what it is that you do, please?
Yeah, sure. So the business, as I said, started about 8 years ago, and it's evolved very, very quickly. And I would say that when I initially started the business, I had a partner at that point. At the moment, it's just me, but we were solely making curtains and blinds and soft furnishings, and that was great. It was really rewarding, and it was great to work alongside someone at that point in time. And the business, as I say, evolved quite quickly, and it became clear to me when I was talking to people and visiting in their houses that actually they didn't just want one blind, some cushions, a curtain, a headboard. They actually wanted a bit more. It's actually how the rooms could hang together. And so the interior design side of the business has grown, probably more so over the 5-6 years. And that's been hugely enjoyable, just kind of branching out in a slightly different direction from how I originally envisaged the business growing, I would say.
Oh, that's amazing. So originally you were making everything yourself, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So that was brilliant. I always wanted to do something creative. I had a former career in the city, and then subsequently married and had kids, and it just wasn't going to be feasible to continue that. But I was always really keen to do something creative. And at the time we were also doing up our own house as well. So it was really enjoyable to kind of think about how to do that. And originally I started out making all the items myself, which was great, really rewarding and a really good creative outlet. It then became evident to me that there was more work coming in that I could really keep up with. And a few things happened. I moved house. I didn't have room for a workshop in my house anymore, which meant it was kind of a challenge just to fulfill the work. And unfortunately, at the same time, I developed tennis elbow in my right hand, and actually right arm rather, and it actually became quite difficult to even thread a needle at that time. So I had to start to look elsewhere. So the business, the quantity of work coming in was growing and I couldn't really keep up. So I started to look elsewhere to find support from other makers. And that's how I suppose I've been able to grow the business quite quickly, is by having other people to support me. And again, that's been really nice as well, because I've then been able to have a team alongside me, and it feels a bit more of a collegiate approach, which I have to say I really enjoy. And I miss that from my old life working in the city.
Oh, so that's amazing. So that's something I wasn't actually aware of. So you now have people, makers supporting you to kind of make the things that you're designing for your clients. Is that the right way of saying it?
So yes, it's really enjoyable having a team of people behind you and knowing that they're working hard to fulfill your brief and your vision for a client. It's worked really well, and I've enjoyed working alongside lots of different specialists in their field. So upholsterers, people who are very good at making headboards or specific types of curtain. There's a lot of expertise out there, and it's been really enjoyable to work with other people.
Yeah, and I guess it also has meant that you can expand on what you're able to offer your clients, because presumably you couldn't make all of those things yourself.
So yes, it's been good to work alongside other people and not to have all the mess contained in my own house, because upholstery is quite a dirty, messy business, and certainly with curtain and blind making as well, there's a lot of materials required, a lot of fluff that floats around. And when that's not just all kind of coming to rest in your own home, it's nice that it's outside in an external place and you can shut the door and work at the end of the day and just enjoy being in your own home.
That makes it, you know, I never thought about it being dirty and messy before, but I guess yeah, there's lots of bits, I guess there's lots of thread and stuffing and things floating around.
All sorts of gubbins, and it would be, I couldn't tell you the nasty surprises you sometimes find on the back of a sofa. So it's good to have that away from the home, I have to say. It makes a difference.
Yeah, that makes, oh, I didn't even think about that. So of course, you were reupholstering furniture as well.
Yeah. I started my sort of, I suppose when this whole, I hate to say the word journey, but the whole journey started for me back in 2007, just after my daughter was born. And I was really keen to, while I was on maternity leave, I was really keen to do something creative that would get me out of the house once a week for a couple of hours and just fulfill that need to do something for myself a little bit whilst in the throes of early motherhood. So I started doing adult education upholstery course in Tunbridge Wells once a week, which I absolutely loved. It was just brilliant being immersed in this sort of slightly kooky underground world of older ladies, shall we say, who were just having a lovely time together and you know, having fun. So from there, the kind of the passion grew, and then I realized that actually I wanted to do more than just upholstery. And so that's when I continued my studies with a City and Guilds diploma, and then also looked into the curtain and blind making, and so kind of expanded my knowledge that way.
Yeah, it's all really fairly recent then, isn't it, that you've been doing? I mean, I know from what you said earlier, you've obviously had an interest in interiors for a long time, but I guess you're actually sort of learning how to make it yourself is still fairly recent.
Yeah, I suppose it feels recent to me, but I have to say I started just after my daughter was born, and she's approaching 15. So actually, when I look back on it in that sense, it feels like I've been going for a long time. But yeah, no, it's something that I really enjoy, and I feel really lucky that I'm able to do it. I've been able to always work in this field since the children were really small, and it's really rewarding, and it fits in around them. That's the key part of it all, I think.
So now that you've sort of changed your business slightly and you have other people working with you, are you missing the sort of hands-on side or not so
massively
much?
Massively. That's exactly where I wanted to start. That's exactly why I started. And I still do small bits of sewing, and I love that. I love the chance to kind of get everything, you know, get all the tools out again and make a bit of a mess, and try and keep it contained into one room at home now. But yeah, it's that's the part I miss. So I suppose making things was one part of the creative process, and the other part now, which is fulfilled through the interior design, is pulling together schemes and plans for clients. And so I suppose I get my fix in that sense, but I do miss actually kind of threading a needle and pinning fabric and looking at how, you know, how it all needs to lie and smoothing things out and that kind of thing. I do miss that. I kind of feel like I've been able to expand the business into a direction which is as fulfilling, even if I can't make any longer, because unfortunately I still have to have tennis elbow, so it's a bit boring in that sense.
I think that makes perfect sense. And as you said, I think it's a really good business decision, because something I think that lots of makers come up against is you only have so many hours in the day or the week or whatever it is. And so there comes a limit to what you can actually produce yourself. So I think business wise, it does make total sense. But I can also see how you would really miss being so hands on.
The creative fix. Yes, it definitely means that I've been able to scale the business up in terms of volume. As I said, my family life is quite crazy with seven of us, and it does take up a lot of time running a house and a family of seven at times. So actually the way that it works now, it fits in with the family. I'm quite adept at the early morning start or the late finish, or try not to work too much at weekends, but certainly evenings I do often need to put the hours in. So it fits in well with family life. I'm here when I need to be, obviously completely focused, but also I'm able to quickly duck into work mode if I need to as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. So one of the reasons I was so interested in talking to you, Chloe, is that what you offer is, I guess, both a product and more of a service, but it's a service and a product, isn't it? Because I was really fascinated by that. So would you mind talking a little bit about what it is that you offer? So if I came to you and said, oh, I'd like my room designing, as you can probably tell, I've never worked with an interior designer, but let's say I came to you and said, I'd like this room designing. What's the process you go for? Just give people an idea of how it all ties together. That'd be great.
Yeah. So I think the key thing is always, I'm always keen to know how someone finds me, if it's word of mouth, if it's any of the advertising that we do, if it's social media. So that's often a part of it. And the main thing I'm always really keen to do is to try and meet a client face to face, ideally as soon as possible. And that makes a huge difference. Sometimes when clients approach me just by email and they want a quote for this and here are some measurements, it's very, very difficult to convey what we do and the processes and talk through the nuances, obviously, of their space, especially if they're just sending through a few photographs. So I do find that the key thing is to try and get a meeting in the diary as quickly as possible with a client and go out and visit them and have a look at the space. I'll then take a set of measurements and photographs, as long as they're happy with me to take photographs, which generally everyone is. And then the key thing is then just to put together an estimate of what it is that they are asking for and what it is that I can, you know, how I'm going to fulfill that brief. It's always nice as well during that first meeting to sit and chat through what a client's tastes are, what the colours are that they like, the patterns they like, dislike. Look at the rest of the room, the other furniture, other paintings, the flooring. Key thing as well is to look at where the light is coming in from the room and where that sort of falls in the space that you're looking to help furnish. So there's lots of things which I suppose I'm thinking about when I'm in a room talking to a client that they won't necessarily know, but I'm kind of gathering as much information as possible. And if the meeting is going well and it looks like it's going to be a positive outcome, I'll often ask a client then to fill in a briefing document, which gives me a really good steer on their likes and dislikes, because it's very hard when you go into someone's house in the first instance to necessarily know, you know, why they've chosen certain colours or why they haven't chosen certain colours and pattern as well. So it really helps to build up a clear picture of what that client likes and dislikes, and I think that's really important. And so the other thing, I guess, it's really, really key is to know if you're going to, when you do meet them, is to know if you're going to get on. I work with a great curtain fitter who always says to me, Chloe, just listen to your inner voice. And if the feeling is that we're not going to get on as a, you know, a designer and client, then I do try really hard to make sure that, you know, that's not the case. But sometimes you just don't gel with everybody. And I think I've come to learn over the last 8 years or so that actually, sometimes I'm not the right fit for someone, or they might not be the right fit for me, or maybe even I just can't meet their deadlines. Sometimes clients do have tight deadlines. So I think that first meeting is key, and it's good about being honest with yourself and with the client. But usually it's a really easy process. And once I've sent through an estimate, the client will get back in touch and sort of say yes or no. And then we'll go from there. We'll start looking at fabrics and scoping out the project. And it becomes, obviously, it's a two-way street. I don't try and impose any particular style or kind of preferences that I have on a client. Obviously, it's not my space. I don't live in it. But I do try and guide clients with sort of sensible decisions and explain the nuances of some of the things that I'm sort of suggesting. And hopefully then we can, you know, we start to create a space that is going to add value to their home and that they're going to want to spend time in.
Yep, that's brilliant. Thank you for explaining that. And so are you looking at, say, if you're looking at a room, so are you looking from everything to the colours on the wall or the paper on the wall to the flooring to the furniture? I guess it depends on the scope, because I suppose some people might already have lovely flooring they want to keep. But in theory, are you looking at a room overall and suggesting all of the elements that go into it?
It depends. Definitely, that's part of what I'm absorbing when I walk into a space for the first time. I'm, even if they're not asking me for ideas about carpet or lights or lamps or anything like that, or sorry, lampshades, I'm still absorbing kind of what it is they've got in their room. And then as the conversation goes on, I'll ask them if they're, you know, what they want to keep, what they want to take out. Sometimes we're guided by a particular painting or a piece of furniture. So it is key to kind of look at the space and what they've got. In terms of the actual kind of clients and how they work, a lot of them, I suppose I've segregated my clients into three different types. And it's interesting kind of to do that, because it helps sort of focus the mind and understand and really listen to what they want. And I kind of, the first type of client I would say I've got is when I go and visit someone and they know exactly what they want, and they know how they want to do it, or they know how they want me to do it, I should say. And it's a very simple, straightforward process. They just want help with the execution and also encouragement. You know, they've built a Pinterest board and they've got some ideas, and they just want, you know, someone else to say, yes, that's going to work because of these reasons. So that's kind of one key client type. The second type, I'd say, are clients who have ideas, but they're not quite sure how to do it, or will it work, or is it a bad idea because of XYZ. And so, you know, we'll then start building a picture and sort of putting all those ideas together in a mood board or looking at samples and just working out exactly, am I going to be able to deliver the vision that's in their head? And then I'd say that the kind of the third type of clients I've got kind of know nothing, and they're not really interested in interior design, but they know that they live, you know, they have a home and they want that home to be comfortable, and they want that home to be practical and to work for all members of the household. So, but they just don't know how to do it. So they're keen to kind of hand over the project, and they're generally, as I'd say, most of my clients are, very open to ideas. And so it's nice to have sort of three different types of client and go from there. In terms of which direction anyone wants to pursue.
Yeah, thank you for explaining it, because I know there must be so many nuances. There's never going to be just a black and white answer, as there probably isn't going to be to my next question. So I'm really curious about, so obviously you mentioned that you work with lots of different makers, so I'm really curious as to whether so the things you suggest for clients use, so is it all bespoke pieces that you work with makers to create, so cushions and curtains, or are you also looking at things that you can source from other places? I'm just genuinely curious about how that all works, because it's such a project, isn't it, to think about how everything in a room comes together.
Absolutely, and it's a minefield. And of course, the other thing you've got to be careful about and be guided by is the client's budget. You know, sometimes clients can be quite kind of shocked, I guess, by the cost of bespoke curtains and blinds. But then when you explain the difference and you show them the difference in terms of quality of the work that we're delivering or hoping to deliver, they understand exactly what it is they're going to get for. And it's not a sort of one size fits all from any number of high street retailers. Not that I'm slagging off high street retailers, but in terms of sourcing items, we do a mixture. So I work with other lighting companies and we'll buy lighting in from them. But we might then personalize that lamp base with a lampshade and a fabric that works better for the client's room and matches the curtains, for instance, in some way, or complements the curtains, I should say, in some way. So I think it's really important just to always understand what the client's budget is, to look at where they want to spend money, and to look at what could be reused as well from within the room. Sometimes, you know, it's a case of just repainting something or changing handles, or repositioning actually furniture within a room makes a big difference. and also potentially changing the lighting. If you light a painting really well, then that can kind of completely change it's the perception in the room. So I would say that there's a variety in terms of what we do. It's not always bespoke. We're happy to kind of source clients' cushions from a number of places, but equally there is, you know, if you have a set of cushions made which are the fabric that you've chosen with a trim that you've chosen, they're completely unique to you. And a lot of the clients that I have, they want that. They want something that's completely unique to them and to their room, and that's what will make their home perfect for them.
Thank you for explaining that, and it's so interesting, I think, and because I guess you, when you talk about the products side of your business, I guess there are those two elements to it. So there's what I guess you're designing to actually create, I want to say from scratch, maybe not from scratch, but maybe you're looking at a chair and thinking, oh, we could upholster it like this, for example. And then there's, you know, thinking about the things that you can potentially, things that already exist that you can source or maybe modify, as you said. There's a lot involved.
There is a lot involved. And also it could be quite a lengthy process as well. So I think sometimes, well, one of the first questions I always ask clients is, you know, what are your timescales for this? You know, have you got a deadline? Are we trying to deliver this within some kind of crazy timescale? And it's always a delight when someone says, no, I'm quite relaxed. You know, this is something I want to start in the autumn, or, you know, that there isn't quite such a time sensitive issue. And I've got a project on at the moment, and it's on a very tight time scale, and it's been a bit kind of, you know, harem scarum, but it's also been really enjoyable because we've made quick decisions, the client's very decisive, and it's been really enjoyable. So there's a good balance, I think, in terms of how things work. I was going to say something else and I can't think what it was.
Don't worry, it sounds like you need a lot of project management skills. Yes, exactly.
A lot of project management skills are required, and also an endless supply of post-it notes, and my to-do list never really sort of seems to get any less, but that's the way I work best, I think, with a never-ending to-do list. And I think the other thing that's obviously had an impact, and it would be strange not to mention it, but is COVID as well. So the last 2 years have had a real impact. You know, work was busy before we went into lockdown, and it has absolutely continued, which is fantastic. But interestingly, now we're seeing more issues with supply of fabric, supply of items that we've ordered for clients' houses. And actually it started to get more frustrating kind of 18 months, 2 years down the line in terms of deliverables than it was when we first started. So it's a constant state of kind of negotiation and communication with suppliers and clients to keep everything on track. And I think also talking back to your point about timescales, this is also an industry where people want to have things in place by certain times. So for instance, Christmas is always, or the run up to Christmas, you know, we all know how busy that is for anyone trying to juggle work and a family and all of that. But I would say in the interior design world, it is usually pretty manic from about September onwards. So yes, any clients who want anything, please start thinking about it now, because we do put this pressure on ourselves to have these perfect houses for the Christmas period. But my word, it can be difficult to make that happen without plenty of planning beforehand.
Yeah, I can imagine. And thank you for bringing up COVID as well, because that's something that in a way we sort of I've almost feel like we've started to move on from it. But actually, as you say, that the impact is still there. And I know that there's a global shortage of just so many things at the moment, which I think is impacting lots of people. Out of interest, though, were you able to still continue during COVID, or did you have to adapt how you worked?
I think I was really lucky. We had quite a few projects underway, and had some clients who were happy to continue. Obviously, we were on Zoom quite a lot and phone calls a lot more, I suppose, as opposed to site visits. And really, I would say that my work wasn't affected. The quantity of work went up, and that was great. But I think because materials were still available, we were able to keep getting items made. And we obviously were very careful with any site visits that we did once we were allowed to start doing site visits, you know, after the initial first few months. So I'd say it didn't really have an impact. But I think what has happened now is that COVID gets the blame for a lot of things, even though, you know, we're out of it, we don't have any lockdowns, you know, anymore. I think the delays that the delays that we've incurred, they're now an excuse for kind of things taking longer than they should do. And obviously energy prices are pushing the cost of materials up in production. So we're, unfortunately, a lot of my costings have had to go up slightly because we've got to pass all of those surcharges on. So it's been a little bit frustrating in that sense. And obviously the other thing that I think has become a struggle sometimes is also courier companies as well. You know, we all know how hard pushed they are to deliver, and I think that's something that we've been at the mercy at for the last few years because of COVID. So I guess it's being understanding where you can, but also wanting to keep everything on track as much as possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think as well, this is possibly an advantage of working with sort of smaller makers rather than perhaps large, because I'm under the impression, tell me if I'm wrong, Chloe, you're working with individual makers in most instances rather than big factories, because I guess those people were able to still keep going.
Yeah, that's the case. So we work with a few suppliers in big factories, and obviously they largely shut down, and they shut down for longer. I think they did pivot quite quickly, some of the fabric companies, when they realised obviously people still wanted to place orders, and were able to, that still happened. But I'd say a large percentage of the people that I work with are, yes, people who are working at home. So, you know, they were fortunate in that sense, as was I, that they were able to still continue with work and just about able to juggle that into family life with homeschooling. So yeah, not a lot of fun, I would say, for most people, but we got
that,
through it.
Yeah, and good that everyone could keep going as well, to some extent. Definitely.
Yeah.
And out of interest, if you don't mind me asking, while we're talking about this, how did you pull together your network of makers to work with?
I suppose it's kind of never ending, because businesses change and people might decide that they don't want to work with others, not for any, you know, dramatic reasons, but just because their own timings change or whatever. Yeah. So I guess it's a case of kind of constantly networking and trying to find people who can help and who are willing to help and who you get along with. That I'd say is a key thing. I have been a part of various networking groups in the past, and that's been a really good way of finding support and help through kind of virtual, you know, virtual assistants, or, you know, a new upholsterer, that kind of thing, or photographers for projects, or anyone to help with social media. So I think it's just been, I've been lucky in the sense that social media has provided the answer to a lot of the problems I've faced in terms of finding support, which I think when you're a small business and you've got to be jack of all trades, you've really got to work hard to find the people who will support you and who you get along with and who understand you. So I would say that it is a constant process of making sure you've got the right team around you and you're supporting them and giving them the information they need to then help you in return.
Yeah, thank you for that, and I hope you don't mind me asking, it just occurred to me that you're possibly the first person that I've spoken to on the podcast who started out purely, not started out doing the making yourself, but now have a team to support you. I don't think I'd spoke to anyone else in that position, which is why I wanted to ask the question, for anyone listening who thinks, well, maybe I could have someone, you know, helping me with whatever it is, because I think sometimes when you run a small business, and I have definitely been guilty of this, you get into the mindset of, you know, you're the person who does it all. And I think a lot of us can spend a long time in that space of just thinking that you have to do the making and the admin and the social media and all the other things.
Yeah, definitely. And it's really hard, I think, as well, to delegate, because when you're self-employed, it's everything. And I remember as a child, I had this, both my parents were self-employed, and I really, really, really didn't want to be self-employed because I could see how stressful it was, how hard they had to work, and how stressful it was at times. And I was adamant, absolutely adamant, that it wasn't something I was going to do. And to now be doing it, I sort of slightly look at myself and think, oh, crumbs, why am I in this situation? But it works really well in terms of family life and the logistical challenges of my life. So I think it is one of the things you do end up having to realize, that if you're going to have a product and also you've got a service, then, or any kind of small business as well, you've got to realize that that help is out there. And just for the business to succeed, for people to buy your product or want to use your service, you can't still be solely responsible for all your Instagram or all your social media or all your invoicing or all the ordering, all the admin that goes on behind the scenes. You've got to start to ask for help. And I think that was a really big realization for me that I cannot do it all, especially as I've alluded to with my family life as well. It needs, something has to give, and asking for help is really important. And also I think then working alongside other people who are helping you, it gives you input, they have ideas and they are passionate about what you do as well. So I think that's been a really enjoyable part of the last few years as the business has grown, has actually been delegating to other people and understanding, you know, what goes on in the outside world. It's not just my own little silo that I sit in, day out.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Thank you. And I think as well, as you've alluded to, I guess if you have a business where that is, you know, as yours is, which is a service and a product, you know, you offer both. I guess there comes a point where you physically cannot be the person doing both if you want to expand beyond a certain point.
Definitely, 100%. There just aren't enough hours in the day, and you know, weekends are there to have a break in the working week. So it's so important to stop, I would say.
Absolutely. So I have one final question, Chloe, if that's okay, and it's a question I ask all of my guests, which is, what is your number one piece of advice for other product creators?
Okay, well, I had a hunch this question might be coming up, so I did have a think about it, and I'm not very good at just sticking to a rule, and so I've actually probably got about sort of three or four bits of advice, and so I'm hoping I'm allowed to share those, because I think I've had some really valuable learnings on this kind of, oh, I hate the word journey, but that's what I'm on. So I think the key thing I would say is to know your customer, and when you go and visit them, take the time to listen to them and what they're asking of you. Why have they approached you? And there must be something there that you've done that they like, or there must be something there that they've heard or they've seen of you. So I think it's always good to kind of ask the question and reassure them that you can still provide that same level of service and expertise for them. I suppose the second thing we talked about a little bit is, as a small business, you are reliant upon suppliers, and this is really hard. And I think it's really good to ensure that you've got the right people around you, and that you are working with them and with their time scales as well. It's quite difficult, you know, you're not going to make any friends if you're demanding about people fulfilling your time scales. There's got to be some flex in the world, and I think that's really been really important for me. So knowing who's helping you and looking after them is a really good sort of thing to have in the back of your mind. We're all human, and we've all got kind of demands in our time. So I think it's also good to always ensure that you try and tell your clients when things aren't going to be delivered on time, and to communicate that back as quickly as possible to them. And I think the last 2 years have shown how key that communication is. So I think also the other thing I would say is take on clients you like and think will work well with you, and vice versa. We can't be expected to all get along with everyone in the world. And I think I'm definitely guilty of saying yes to all business that comes my way. I have a fear of the work drying up. And sometimes I've taken on projects and I thought, oh gosh, I hope we're not going to run and, you know, I hope this is all going to go smoothly. And it, 9 times out of 10, it does. And it's brilliant. But I do sometimes worry that, you know, that might not be the case. And I'd say the last thing for any business owner, really, creator and product provider, is be really realistic about your logistics. You know, my home life is quite demanding, and so I have to be careful about how much time I actually spend traveling. Travel time, to me, it kind of kills creativity, and that to-do list in the back of your mind only grows as you drive further and further away from home. So I think sometimes just be really mindful of what you can actually give and the hours that you need to spend sitting at your desk creating the schemes for clients and pulling together their designs, because actually that's what matters. It doesn't matter that you're chasing a client who's an extra 20 miles down the road if it's not really a project that's going to give you kind of a spark of enthusiasm and excitement. So I think it's really key just to think about your logistics and organize your time effectively.
Thank you. And absolutely no problem to give more than one piece of advice. They were all really valuable. So thank you so much for those. And thank you for being so prepared.
Well, I tried.
I'm getting a real sense of what it must be like to work with you, Chloe. You're very, I can tell you're very organized. Well, thank you so much for absolutely everything that you've shared. I've found it fascinating talking to you. And yeah, thank you.
My pleasure. It's been lovely talking to you, Vicky. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening right to the end of this episode. Do remember that you can get the full back catalogue and lots of free resources on my website, vickyweinberg.com. Please do remember to rate and review this episode if you've enjoyed it, and also share it with a friend who you think might find it useful. Thank you again and see you next week. Hi, this is just a little note. So if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.